Let me join RJ in thanking our organizers for all the work that makes this meeting work. Let me also join RJ and Dawn in my case, being able to honestly report that the first person I ever saw fall asleep after lunch in the back of my lecture hall was my own father. Very, very inspiring at the beginning of my career, I can tell you. My mother looked rapt, if it's any comfort. sort of her job, I think. I want to talk as much today about the study of the modern right as about the modern right itself, as you'll see in a moment. It is a long-standing observation among historians and political scientists and political sociologists that modern conservative politics in America were long ignored by scholars. It does turn out that the one thing worse than hundreds of academic historians, political scientists, and sociologists ignoring conservatives turns out to be hundreds of them studying it. We have been not drowned, but we have enjoyed a steady trickle now of studies, a number of which are obviously wonderful contributions to our sort of self-knowledge as a society. But an important number of which, and they're the ones I want to focus on today, have been motivated by a striking and, I think, misplaced determination to find a durable key that can explain the modern conservative and Republican coalition, maybe especially in presidential politics, which so often organizes our conversations and understandings about modern political coalitions, a key to understanding the makeup, the attraction, the policy ideology, and so on, of that conservative coalition. I suspect the determination to find a key was born, understandably, of two previous periods of long stability in the American party system, that which followed the Civil War of Republican dominance and that which was understood to be born in and then followed the New Deal of Democratic dominance, two events that both seemed to demonstrate theories of realignment, that the party system could be durably aligned into a dominant and a non-dominant party, a minority party. Both of which periods seem to be able to trace their roots to a single enormous event or cause, the Civil War in one case and the New Deal in the other. Arguably, there were keys to those patterns of politics in the United States, and it seemed to suggest, I think, to many scholars in the post-war period that the challenge was to simply find the key that would help explain events that were unforeseen by so many, including the rise of modern conservatism in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. I understand the instinct to search for such keys, and it's worth pointing out that, in a sense, those scholars who came to think about that and search for that were aided in a way, invited in a way, by the declarations of some conservatives, particularly of the Goldwater stripe, who after 1964 would often discuss a very specific moment in which modern conservatism arose, a particular personality or a small handful to whom it, those events could be traced. And the suggestion that that point of view, that political movement eventually became the hegemonically dominant within half of the American political spectrum. Consider, for example, Bill Rusher's phrase that the Goldwater candidacy, quote, laid the foundations for all that came after. This image that there was this decisive moment, that it ends up completely reorienting half the political spectrum, and that that becomes sort of all that comes after among conservatives. I want to sketch a disagreement with this general approach of so many scholars for a few different reasons. First, it implies, it is often motivated in the study of modern conservatism by a sense that what the challenge, the empirical outcome to be explained is not simply that the Republican Party that seemed to dominate politics, at least presidential politics, from the late 1960s until the early 1990s, or even maybe after, was conservative in a way that it had not been before, but also that it was, that American politics was durably realigned in ways that made that coalition dominant in presidential politics, and hence dominant in certain important ways in American politics. That sort of analysis obviously draws on theories of realignment in American politics that I joined David Mayhew and many others in being somewhat skeptical of. I think in particular in the post-war American context, theories of realignment to dominant and minority parties like that are particularly inapt. The FDR's presidential coalition, it seemed so hegemonic for a time, was already visibly eroding even before his death, and certainly eroded quickly after it. And I think we often forget just how competitive a period of presidential politics existed, even under Nixon, even in the 1980s, and even now. That these moments that can appear to, at times in retrospect as having been dominant of one party, we often forget just how competitive they are. And in that sense, to be able to speak of a post-1945 period to now, in which we have 70 years of highly competitive presidential politics, I think is worth lingering on. The second reason that I'll briefly dispute is the particular kinds of theories, and particularly one that I want to dispute about a proposed key to understanding modern conservatism. But the main implication of this entire way of thinking about modern conservative politics and Republican Party politics is because it assumes a homogenizing understanding of party of the conservative movement and Republican modern Republican politics that I think is unjustified. And that's really what I'm going to end with. So let me first sketch a determination of any number of scholars, a significant number of political scientists, political historians, some sociologists, to find a key to understanding modern Republican and conservative politics. The most clear expression of that, I think, among political historians has been to understand the Goldwater moment in 1964 as sort of the moment from which you can understand modern conservatism. But I want to especially stress one dearer to my heart and things I study, which is the argument made by many, and increasing, I think, in momentum over time, that race should be understood as the cause realigning American politics, and particularly Republican politics. Consider very briefly an argument that's familiar to many in this room, that race, the race issue, was the keystone to understanding the modern Republican trajectory, the claim that white Southern support in presidential elections was gained at the price of capitulation to the regional Southern position at the time on race, that this was then acted out, saw the fruit of that was born in the Nixon administration's swerve from civil rights positions to satisfy white Southern demands. And then in the hammering out of conservative policy agendas after Nixon in the 70s, but also under Reagan and after, on not just affirmative action, but on issues like taxes and welfare and more, that were hammered out, it has been argued by many, on the basis of racialist agendas and views. This portrays modern conservatism as basically coterminous with the self-conscious politics of whiteness in the United States. This obviously has become, if anything, even more pervasive now than it might have been understood to be at the time of the inception of the critiques and analyses of the Southern strategy several decades ago. In my reading, this is an overwrought analysis. It simply reduces or simplifies modern conservatism and republicanism in diverse ways. I can tick off quickly some of the reasons for saying that. I won't go into them in any depth because time doesn't permit. Among them, just again, I'm throwing these out in quick sequence. Dwight Eisenhower tore off from FDR's coalition important chunks of the rim or peripheral South in the early 1950s before Brown versus Board on the basis of issues other than race, and durably did so. The coalition that Eisenhower and then Nixon assembled in the 1960s and 50s and Eisenhower and 60s for Nixon included deep forays into the ranks of centrists nationwide, as least as much as into the white South, something often really downplayed and not appreciated by analysts of the Southern strategy. And not surprisingly, the Nixon administration ended up producing a very complex policy record, very much including on racial issues, very much including on crime, a policy record that does not fit the simplistic understanding or story about race as a dominating motive of Republicans and conservatives. The same could be said of the policy agenda that emerged in the late 1970s among conservatives under Reagan and since. But I want to put most of my emphasis in my remaining time now into arguing not that a specific analysis trying to homogenize the Republicans or the right in modern American politics is wrong because of specific empirical claims it makes. I don't want to focus mostly on arguing that any one specific analysis is wrong, but instead on the, I want to focus instead on the assumption, the proposition, that politics of a major party in the modern United States can and should be understood in terms that are more or less homogenizing, that we should understand there to be a key because it's dominated by the politics of that entire sector or dominated by one or a very, very small number of issues that unite or unify its members. And so, in very quick sequence, the coalition assembled by Dwight Eisenhower, which has as much claim as any to be the foundation of modern Republican politics, presidential politics, was as incredibly heterogeneous as you would expect of any coalition that contained 50% or more, for that matter, of the electorate of a continental republic. It was an incredibly diverse and complex thing, representing strains of moderate republicanism, more conservative emergent ones, and many in between. It was also subject to the ideological overhang of the era of liberal dominance, the effects of which could be seen well into the Reagan administration and arguably even now on diverse issues, regulatory ones, and much else. Recall that it wasn't until the 1980s that Republicans championed a thoroughgoing rethinking, for example, of antitrust policy, finally shedding a liberal framework of thinking about that subject that had been taken up nearly two generations before. So Nixon's coalition in 1960 and again in 1968 was similarly very heterogeneous, regionally, racially even then, and certainly intellectually in terms of the interests it represented and so on. It was subject to the same intellectual hegemony of liberalism that continued to overhang the American political culture. And increasingly, it was subject to the interest group dynamics created by liberal programs like Social Security and now also Medicare and Medicaid, that created huge swathes of American society, including middle-class society, that were wedded deeply to entitlement programs. And the same heterogeneity, the same influence of diverse politics, intellectually, interests-wise, and so on, was absolutely true of Ronald Reagan, a very heterogeneous electorate, highly variegated policy agendas that did not faithfully represent any one strain of conservative thinking or activism, not religious conservatives, not tax cutters, not liberal Republicans, and certainly not thoroughgoing small government economic reformers or libertarians. The resulting coalition, if I may pull this up to the present day, but meaning to discuss this entire period when you think about it, has, while in office, engaged in a really breathtaking array of internally, if you will, contradictory policies, contradictory but reflecting the incredible variegation of any party that assembles anything like 50% of the American voting public. And I want to just throw out, as I close now, a few ways of putting this that are meant to contrast my view on this with that of some. Take, for example, the argument about what's the matter with Kansas, so famous 15 years ago, arguing that while Republicans were good at talking about certain values, they in fact sort of didn't mean it and in reality enacted very different ones. The suggestion being there that there was a homogeneity to it. They would talk about one thing but predictably do something else. I want to suggest that that really misses a lot of the nuance of Republican policymaking, just as it would Democratic if we were to talk about that. The modern Republican Party in office, for example, has both fought and also expanded entitlement programs. It's done both comfortably, if you will, to the frustration of all sides. It has decentralized some powers back to the states and also increased and asserted federal powers in other areas. It's advanced important proposals from religious conservatives and in other ways gone along with general secularization. And if we didn't know this before, and we should have, we now know that it harbored both free traders and champions of protectionism. And the modern complexity that is the Republican coalition in 2016, it seems to me, is a nice reminder of the incredible variegation that has represented this party for the last 70 years, and hence should, I think, inspire us to understand that there isn't a key to understanding its politics, that it is a big mess of things, of viewpoints, of ideologies, of interests, and so on, as you would expect of any party of that size in a country like this one. Thanks.